This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Taking on this project, was there a deliberate sense that you wanted to take something on that was as successful as Horton was, like that was deliberately different, or was it just sort of like incidental that it was so different?
Because a lot of things came my way. You know, after doing a movie like that, obviously the people that know me know that I probably wasn't going to do another movie like Horton again. Even though Horton was a great success and a movie that I really wanted to make, that was my favorite book when I was a kid, and I wanted to do a Seuss movie right. But it's getting stuff right is something I'm really into, and when I feel like stuff got done wrong, it bums me out. So taking on Hacks with the amount of people that really love it, it seems like an interesting challenge again to try and take that huge body of source material and try and get it right and go to the people that created it and go to the people that it means a lot to and make sure that they agree, which is what I did on that, you know? So it's great to have the people involved in the book, in the history of the book, come out and see it and get the DC guys involved and all that stuff. But, I mean, there was a bunch of movies I was looking at. I have another one with over at Columbia with Chuck Roven that did The Dark Knight, and I have, you know, a bunch of other stuff going on. But this project came up, and it's like, this is what was in that letter that I wrote to Brolin, which was, when I heard about that movie, I thought, God damn it, I wish I was doing that. And then when I saw what was going on with it, I was like, hey, man, there's an opportunity there. I really want to get in on this movie. And I actually, it was the least lucrative job, but it's the coolest one and the most distant from what I had just done. And like I said to Josh, if you know me, and like Andrew probably told you, if you know me, it seems more likely that I do Hex, not Horton. You know what I mean? If you know me as a person, it's more in my sensibility. So
how were you able to convince those people who didn't know you?
You just go meet people and talk to them. I mean, it's really just a matter of, you know, it's a business of relationships, and it's all storytelling, and it's all based on vision and, you know, sense of tone and sense of humor and all that stuff. So I think it was a matter of, you know, Brolin really believing in it, Andrew really believing in me, and the studio. I mean, I had other things going on. I mean, Greg Silverman, it's right here. I mean, I had other stuff going on with him. It's not like I was an unknown quantity to Warner Brothers. I mean, they all knew who I was just from countless other meetings. So it was a matter of coming in and meeting on this movie, you know.
How tough was it to get John?
Malkovich?
Yeah.
We just called him. Dude, what's up? Oh, fine. Yeah, fine. Oh, that's fine, James. Yeah. No, he's, John's into it. He's really, he brings a sense of intelligence to the character that I love so much. But he was, he's a good friend of Josh's, and I think the caliber that Josh brings to the movie lends itself to other great people, and I think John was interested because of that initially, and then once he read the material and looked at the character and we discussed how to make it his, he jumped at it. You know, he's great.
So as somebody who comes from animation originally and is an artist in that, I mean, were you a comic book guy coming up in a lot of ways and reading a lot of different books and Jonah Hex, or was there something
I missed the middle part of that?
Just being a comic book guy coming up as a kid and coming up in filmmaking, I mean, were you reading comics the whole time as well?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I go through phases. I fell out of superheroes and got really into Staple Together stuff and became a big Dan Klaus fan and got into that whole sort of scene for a long time before I came back to... I actually lived over Al's Comics in San Francisco for 10 years. I lived right above it, Sacred Rose Tattoo and Al's Comics, right across the street from the 500 Club, so I could get drunk, get tattooed, and get geeky books right all within 40 feet of my house and go pass out. So it was, you know, I really sort of stayed with the comics for a long time, you know. It sort of in and dipped in and out of it, but I mean, this is a book that I always loved. When I came in to meet with Warner Brothers, I had a digest, a Western Tales digest with me, and I told Josh this story, which was one of my favorite ones when I was a kid, when Jonah Hex is tied to a stake out in the desert, and Iron Jaws bites off his bonds, and then gets bit by a rattlesnake, so Jonah Hex staggers through the desert for like miles to get to the town, and he walks into the town, but there's only a person doctor, so he kicks on the door, and he goes up the stairs, and the nurse is like, you can't come in here, can't bring a dog in here, this is a people doctor, and there's a guy getting his foot worked on upstairs, and he's like, take that thing outside and put a bullet in his brain, it's a stupid dog. So Jonah Hex opens the window and grabs the guy getting his foot worked on, and throws him out the window to his death, and then goes, Doc, you gotta fix my dog. It's like his sense of comedy, his sense of humor. I mean, I was into it that long ago that I still remember those stories that I love so much about Jonah Hex's sense of humor and stuff, you know?
And so since you've come on, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I know Jimmy and Justin, so I know that you've been talking to them as they've been doing the book as well and kind of syncing up with what their view has been the past few years as they've kind of revitalized the character.
Yeah. Have I been keeping up with those guys?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I talk to Jimmy pretty regularly. I love Jimmy, and Justin's great, too. Those guys are hilarious, great guys. Great sensibilities.
Is there any chance of Clint Eastwood doing a cameo as Jonah's dad?
No. I mean,
the fanboys would love it.
Clint would be like, there's no way I'm doing that. Forget it. Not unless you did everything in one take.
Well, speaking of that,
action. I'm leaving.
Yeah. How much of an influence were his movies? Because I know that was
massive influence on me. Them shooting this movie Anamorphic.
Yay! Thank you.
Yeah, dude. Mitch has some of the gnarliest glass. There's like one of our flat 25s. There's three of them in the world. One of our big flat 25s. I mean, Anamorphic. The studio's like, really? You really want to do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me and Mitch are like, yeah. Anyway, it was expensive, but it's totally worth it.
There's so many classic Western films. I mean, which ones do you find you're drawing most inspiration from? Or are there any that
early,
you can point
early,
to?
Early Peckinpah, I love. Like the really, like Noon Wine, all that kind of stuff. I love that stuff. I mean, obviously, I love Corbucci. I love all those guys, all those nutcases. Mm-hmm. They're all just like crazy communist Westerns where they're all clearly on acid when they made them. I love that stuff.
Now this is
Django. That stuff's great. Dragging the coffin.
Although Jung has had like a number of major roles in the last few years. Although Jung has obviously had a phenomenal last few years, this is really the first like big movie that he's carrying.
About that. You're right. He's actually not that big a star. Can you fire him?
it's really not. It
I don't
feels
want
like
W you in my fucking movie.
Because
we heckle each other all the time. When I was meeting with him, I was like, Josh, he's like, yeah, I can't. When he was like, Jimmy, man, gnarly, you got to do this movie, man. I was like, Josh, I can't believe I'm working with. He's like, yeah. I'm like, the guy who, he's like, yeah, start in Thrashing. He's like, dude, please. So he calls me Horton Hears a Who all the time, and I call him Thrashing. I'm a skater, so, you know, a skater in his 30s. So, like, we saw those, like, exploitation movies in the 80s when we were kids. Yeah. Josh with McSqueeb skating, Thrashing, with keyboard solos and stuff. It's hilarious.
I'll be in trouble again.
It's great. Anyway.
I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about the set piece that we're witnessing right now.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about it. This is Turnbull's boat. This is Turnbull's boat, and he's gonna take it to Washington to blow up the White House. It's great, dude. It's like initially the set piece was in a fort, and I wanted the fort and a giant boat, so I just wrote the boat, and here it is. We're on it. But it's part of Turnbull's overall plan, and so it's like another thing for Jonah to come to fight him on. But it's I don't want to go too deep into it. But
can you say if the boat's featured throughout the film, or if this is something in the climax?
No, it's just one piece of the movie. Just one little, this is a oneer. We've got a bunch of oneers in this movie where we just built these huge sets and went on them for a chunk of the movie and we're out.
Can you say at which point in the film am I
No.
At
all?
No. Okay, fair enough.
Okay, well, you mentioned the Anamorphic, you're shooting this anamorphically. I'm curious, as a filmmaker, what do you think about the digital revolution with digital? Are you always going to be film?
What's talking to a guy who made like 6 movies at Pixar and 2 movies at Blue Sky, I am so not interested in digital anything. I'm like, digital. I just like, I mean, I love those movies that I made there and worked on and worked for those other guys and learned so much on. But I think that we're doing so much in this movie practical. Like Megan Fox dodging a bullet while Graydon shoots her and the lamp actually blows up. We're doing all this old school stuff. It's really fun. This sequence where, you know, Burke throws a knife at Jonah and he catches it in his hand. We're doing it all practical just because it's fun to do, to try and get away with. And because Billy and those guys are such good operators and Mitch is so good at that stuff that we can get away with it practical. Whenever we can, we will, you know. It's really, it just lends itself to the flavor of the movie that we're shooting it in Anamorphic and we're doing as much stuff practical and real stunts. And Mitch Amundsen.
Oh, okay, great.
Who shot Wanted and Transformers and, you know, was Michael's operator and deep guy forever. It just seemed he's just a great choice because the speed he goes, we share the same love for a lot of the same types of movies, and we both wanted to shoot the movie Anamorphic.
You mentioned Megan Fox. The film hasn't been shooting that long, I don't believe it, but yet she told me when I talked to her a couple weeks ago that she'd already wrapped her work in the film.
She's coming back.
Oh, she is coming back.
She's not getting away that easy.
Oh, okay. So would you say that?
No, I talked to her the other day. She's coming back for a couple days.
So her role is fairly substantial then.
Megan's okay. She comes up a bunch of times. She plays Jonah's girlfriend. So.
Okay, clearly a leading lady.
Oh yeah. She's in the movie. She doesn't just show up and be like, hey, what's up? And she's in it. She actually we rewrote her character and she fights and stabs and shoots and she gets into it.
Wears period guard very well.
Yeah, she really does. I was like, can you breathe? She's like, yeah, it's fine, dude.
I was gonna.
No, she's fine in that thing. She fights in that thing.
I was gonna ask you about
like literally fights, like, yeah.
I was going to ask you specifically about that outfit, because that the pictures of her from set in that corset
seemed impossible.
Not only did they seem impossible, but they were everywhere on the planet.
Like those, one, that's one of three of those outfits that is that crazy that she wears. She wears like four or five different outfits. Michael Wilkinson, who did our costume designer, did like 300 and Watchmen and American Splendor, which is my favorite of his. But like just got the mustard stains on Harvey Picard's cardigan, just perfect. I think he just did a great job with Megan. He cooked up the craziest garb for her. And she wore it great and fought in it, and she was a trooper. I would be very uncomfortable and complain if I had to wear that, but...
Well, that costume, it looks like something where she worked in a bar. Like, can you talk about where that sort of costume comes from, or her character's just crazy?
No, she's just, that's what she wears. It's just it's just her choice. She's like Jonah's girlfriend's a prostitute. He's the guy that doesn't have to pay and gets to stay all night. No, these are two people who kind of have shattered lives. Their lives are busted and broken, and they can never kind of really be together, and that's why they love each other. So that's the point of the relationship, you know?
So is she sort of patterned after Tallulah in the current series?
No, how would they fight later if she was patterned after her? I'm kidding. I'm totally... No, I'm just kidding. But no, she was not.
Okay.
Is there any chance this is going to be a trilogy? Because we've been hearing that everywhere. But...
No, this is the prequilogy I'm doing right now, and then we'll do the trilogy. No, I mean, I have stories to go to the moon. Did I just make up a new word?
You know what?
Prequilogy?
That's t-shirt material right there.
Prequilogy. I'm totally stamping that as mine. You guys heard it here first. Prequilogy.
That's great.
Lucas is like, damn it. Really all mad. Quarters. So what else?
You answered the question I had about digital with practical effects, which was a separate thing, but I'm curious about...
Sorry, go back.
No, I'm just curious about digital cameras and you. Could you just talk about your feelings on digital cameras?
Oh, I think it's fantastic, and there's like different... Definitely has a place, and, you know, it's like calibrate before every setup, or the flexibility you get with it. I mean, and my experience is talking to all the DPs that I talked to, many, many, many DPs before I made this movie. And obviously coming from digital and working with a lot of the scientists at Pixar for many years, or guys I just know socially over the years, listen to what everybody has to say about it. I mean, obviously it's the future, but just film is film. I mean, I couldn't see shooting Jonah Hex any other way. And not Super 35, anamorphic on film. It's the only way to make this movie, period. And they tried really hard to talk me out of it, and I refused to do it anything but anamorphic and on film, because it's the only way to make this movie.
I'm a scope fetishist, so...
Every film I love, it's just like that, you know, and the way that...
I can't imagine
Leone
having made the movies he made without that insane wide frame.
It's harder to cut, you know, and you have to be really careful about your shot flow, and it's like you can put stuff in lots of leg hold traps, ow, but... It looks so badass. You just can't. You know, Josh's face just owns it too. The giant head. It's just great.
But you mentioned the framing aspect. How much pre-production did you do designing certain shots?
Thousands and thousands of storyboards. Thousands. I think when I came in for my first pitch, I had the first 6 minutes of the movie boarded completely, and I stepped through it on a quick time. Totally. First 6 minutes, and then I did another additional 8 minutes. I think for the second pitch, and by the time we hit the green light, I think I had a third of the movie completely storyboarded with every little piece and composition and bit.
Does that help you on set? Like
no,
speed?
Mitch ignores all of it. I'm kidding. No. Thanks for this, Hayward. No, I think we use it a lot. I mean, it's sequences like this, and the train, we got a big train sequence, and, you know, sequences like that. And then it's like, you know, we did a scene with John Malkovich and Wes Bentley where it's a plotting sequence in this big plantation, and then it's like, you know, I'll board it just because I'm a geek, but then we'll just go in there and do moments in jazz, you know, where I'm like, I want to feel like a snake is in the garden, you know, so he does this crazy snake move with a 50-foot techno crane, and we arrive at them, and then John takes over with his crazy eyes.
So to what... As you and Mitch are working things out, you know, what kind of visual style do you have in mind in terms of how the film's going to look? Is it going to be really stylized, or you're trying to go more natural?
It's pretty stylized. I mean, if you look at it's pretty stylized. I mean, we're doing a lot of camera movement. one of the things is, like, we've, you know, we used the anamorphic lenses for the way, like, we did a big finale battle, you know, a little while ago, where we did a lot of very traditional classic sort of spaghetti-ish sort of stuff, and then we mix it in with a lot of, you know, crane work and a lot of modern action film techniques. So you kind of fuse those things together. When you go back out to the really snappy stuff, it really has more value and meaning. I honestly think that if you tried to show, like, a Corbucci movie to today's audience, they'd be texting each other like, WTF? You know, I don't think the pace and everything would, you know. And so I think it's a matter of, like, using that as a jumping off point. Because I don't want to copy anything, you know what I mean? But using it as a jumping off point and really using it as a touchstone and starting from there and going to new places with it. Because, you know, Mitch has got a really, Mitch brings a really specific thing to it too. And together it's like, hey, you got your chocolate milk peanut butter, you know? We got like a great Reese's peanut butter cup going. It's great. In a totally not gay way.
I'm not saying it either way. I'm curious, though, with this film, how much room is there for improv versus sticking to the script? Because, Will, they were telling us before you guys might be tweaking it a little bit, you know, the script.
You do it all the time.
Well, absolutely. But I'm just curious if it allows for improv with the characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we definitely fool stuff all the time. I mean, John, you know, Will, just everybody, Josh, everybody does. I mean, we get there and we figure out what's best on the day. I mean, we have a very specific plan. And if you know... It's kind of like the whole old Pixar plussing it idea. Like, you know, you got something that really works well, you know, you get there. If you can achieve that foundation, you've got that, great. Then plus it from there. Let talented people be talented.
The rhythm of most Westerns is obviously very different from that of, you know, contemporary animated films. Do you find that you're sort of matching, you're trying to kind of face with the challenge of matching the rhythm of a Western, or do you feel like you're bringing the Western to a faster pace, like...
No, because, I mean, my animated background has kind of nothing to do with what I'm doing. I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's you know, rhythm comes later. I have to provide the material to create that rhythm. It's a totally different way of working. I mean, this is like you go out and you capture something, and then you shape what you captured. That's shaping something and shaping it, shaping it, shaping it. And getting to do it 5 and 6 times. It's a totally different thing. So...
The comic's been around for a long time. Are there any sort of Easter eggs that you're already planning right now in the film that will, maybe only the comic book, the real
comic?
Like
the one I just told you about, like the X? Yeah, we put stuff in there. I mean, I can't help but be influenced by the comic because we've done so much of it. Whenever we can stick stuff in there, it's great to be able to do it. But, you know, there's things like, I really love the idea that, you know, his native background, like, the tomahawk's one of his weapons for sure. Like, you know, when we first started on the movie, he had a knife, and I'm like, dude, it's got to be the tomahawk. You know, it's like little things like that that I draw from the comic that I think are so important. And like I said, the thing of him being the choice of Turnbull stories and then mixing in some of the old comic book reasons for why his face has been burned into some of the lore and stuff like that, you know. Really kind of drawing upon the origin material as opposed to just creating new stuff out of nothing.
The character design for Turnbull is obviously a whole lot different than the old comic. And it's a lot more dramatic. I was wondering why you decided to make those changes.
I got to be honest with you. For the character design, I went further because I wanted it to sort of have its roots in the comic book. And I felt like if he just looked like a normal guy. And I worked on it with Josh. You know, Josh has his own wig guy. And his wig guy came and he had the long hair. And he put the long hair on. I was like, done. They're going to cut it all down. I was like, dude, leave the Skinnerd hair. Please. It's so awesome. And then we put like a tan line on the top of his head. So the top of his head's white and his face is dark. And he's got a mask that he wears. It's just it's cooler that way. And Michael Wilkinson, again, he cuts great silhouettes, and he's really talented. And so I like letting talented people be talented, you know.
Because Hex isn't as well known as Spidey, Batman. Do you find you just have a few less people looking over your shoulder, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. You can't make movies for those guys. You gotta try and honor what people love about the thing that you love about it, and then try and. Now that's the target for me, as opposed to being like, I got to please everybody, because you, especially now, you can't please everybody ever. So it's like you have to ask yourself, am I a fellow with good taste? And then find out what you love about it. You know when people make comic book movies where they don't care about, like, shall rename nameless, but there's people that take video game properties, take comic book character properties, and like, here's an awesome profit thing I can exploit, and they don't care about the source material. It's when those guys make choices that have nothing to do with it. But if you base it on sort of, its roots, I think you can get away with it. It's making changes, like having Turnbull not look like he is in the comic.
I think we need to wrap it up and let you do what you need to do.
Yeah, really? Am I up?